Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, everyone. It is the build-up show, the Merseyside Derby, Everton versus Liverpool, early kickoff on the Saturday. I am Paul Machin. Chris Pajak joins me. Ross Chanley joins me for the build-up to what is likely to be the most exciting derby in years, Chris. They're all exciting in their own way.
I don't think it is.
Okay.
I think there's two sides, both playing with something to lose.
And that makes it
boring.
So a bit like when we went to watch that 86 Cup Final replay thing with all the legends and they were just so scared to lose. It was the dullest game of Legends football ever.
If you say so, I don't remember it, so it was probably boring.
Yeah.
No, I genuinely think it's just going to be the same as it's been the last few years, to be honest. You know, generally speaking, a pretty pathetic game of football, but with unimaginably high moments, if there is going to be wins. And that's what we've seen, really, isn't it? You know, generally speaking, they've been such hard games, but these moments, Origi, Mane and all that type of stuff, and Pickfords and all that type of stuff, that just punctuates a boring game.
They've been getting closer in that regard, haven't they? You know, as Chris is right, it's those big moments that are what we take away from them. I couldn't tell you half of the games. They've come close to beat us season before. You know what? It all blends into one after a while, doesn't it? The point is we've been loads better than them for a very, very long time. And they've come closer in games, but that's been all the sweeter when we've had those little moments of satisfaction. I've got a sneaky feeling that the era of them being utterly shite is coming to an end. And maybe we need
What's
to
giving you that impression? Is it the fact that the top of the league?
It's the Mersey Millionaire Unbeatables, Chris. Like, you know what I mean? That's what we've got to deal with. No, but this is it, Ross, is that part of it's like enjoy all them, look back, and no one can ever take those moments away from us, first and foremost. But I think that there is maybe a slight, I don't want to say power shift, because there isn't yet, but like there's a power shift within Everton. They're a much better force this time around.
Yeah, and you can appreciate the fact that they've got a really good manager who's probably had time now to instill his, how he wants
midfield
to play. He's got better plays. I was talking to Baz yesterday and the fact that, you know, they've got competition at centre-half now, and apparently Yerry Mina had the game of his life because he knew someone else was kind of coming in. They can...
Don't listen to Baz, though.
I know, but they can still get better. And like you said, I did talk about the midfield, the fact that, you know, it's them transitions in midfield. Like, you know, they've got James Rodriguez there, who's, you know, miles better than Gylfi Sigurdsson or any of the shite that they've had for the past couple of years. You know, they've got confidence. Calvert-Lewin's, you know, turned into prime Ronaldo somehow for some reason, but you know, it's probably credit to how they set up. But that's the difference this time. They'd set up low block for so long and, you know, tried to hit us on the counter attacks, which is why those games were shit. They're in a position now where they can approach the game differently and they're at home. They can probably go for a bit more, which might help us out.
Yeah,
or they might be scared and have to think about how we set up this time.
This is the excitement thing for me, and it sounds a bit perverse, and we've been having this conversation. In fact, I was talking to the Toffee TV lads, and Si, obviously, one of our production guys, and Si's 24, so he's grown up with us not knowing really anything other than us being miles better than Everton. And he's like, well, I never wanted them to win again. I was like, I don't want them to win. There's not a single shred of me that wants to see Everton win a derby. But there is something that Chris, too, you know, again, we grew up in the 90s when we couldn't win a derby for love nor money. Like, I remember being there when we finally did it. But I also remember having to go into school with my tail tucked between my legs every time they beat us, you know, Andrzej Kanchelskis and Duncan Ferguson et al. And
otherwise known as twats.
Oh, God, yeah, the dogs of war, mate. Big Joe Royal's dogs of war.
Barry Owen.
Oh, God. Yeah, El Barrett and Co. But it made it all the more satisfying. There's more satisfaction to be gained by beating a good team than there is by beating a shit team. And that sounds daft, but and it does sound really counterintuitive. But Everton being slightly more competitive, we've beaten them in all the stupid ways. Like we said this the other day, there's not too much more we can do against a rubbish team. At least we're changing the story a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, when we were talking the other day, I think we were outside, weren't we? And we were having a chat. And it's like, look, I used to play squash with a guy that I used to beat every week, and I stopped playing squash with him because I just got bored of it. Yeah. Like, I'm a competitive person. I like to win, but you don't want it to be fucking easy. Yeah. And that's what Liverpool-Everton games have been for so long. So for me, I'm weirdly looking forward to this more than other derbies, but I do think because Everton have got something to lose, 100% record, top of the table, and Liverpool have got something to lose, that record to Everton and how good we've been for a long period of time and not winning a derby for a decade. I think there's two sides that could go into this game and almost stalemate it up, to be honest with you, and just stink the place out. Or, as Ross mentioned, it could be the opposite. Maybe Everton come in with so much confidence that they're going to go for it, but I personally can't see that happening. I just think, you know, for me, this is one of the biggest games of the season, and I'd rather it be against a good side than a fucking average shit side, to be honest with you.
Well, look, again, the stalemate thing's all well and good, isn't it, Ross? But we've seen that the league's mad.
Yeah,
like the environment's mad. It's Goodison Park. We've got a not very good record at Goodison Park. It should never be forgotten. I think we all expected to come back after, you know, it restart and blow them away. And yes, it was a disjointed Liverpool side that was put out. It was a disjointed performance for a host of reasons. But again, we probably expected too much in this. Now Everton are good. I think Everton should be probably the most optimistic they've been about this game in a while.
And it's probably a good time to play Liverpool on the back of it. You know, well, we could argue both ways actually on a 7-2 defeat, but there's not had time to correct it. Everyone's gone on international duty and gone their own way. They come back on a Friday and we play Saturday morning. So there's no time to kind of sit down, go through what went wrong in that game, pick it apart. This is how we fix it. You've literally got a quick turnaround. And for both sides, they've both got a weak spot in the goalkeeper. So, you know, how do you beat Liverpool? Well, we probably don't fancy chances most of the time. We've got Adrian in goal. I'm not throwing him under the bus, by the way, but with what happens. But with the confidence that he's under, and if you're Calvert-Lewin, do what we do to Pickford. Come stick someone on a goalkeeper who's nervous, who's, you know, susceptible to mistakes, or, you know, set pieces, corners.
Yeah.
Bully him. That's what Everton need to do to get something out of this game.
It's mad, isn't it? Because I actually was thinking about the goalkeeper situation this morning, and it actually benefits both keepers that there's no fans. Big time. Like Pickford, because their fans now realise that he's shite and maybe have done for a few months.
Gets too emotional in games
like this, and Adrian, because their fans would be going big time at Adrian after you know what they've seen him do over the last few months and stuff. So Adrian, it might benefit slightly more because obviously, you know, more Everton fans in them and focusing their ire and everything else on him. But yeah, I think the goalkeeper might decide this game.
Yeah, it's mad. I mean, like the goalkeeper thing is really interesting because there's such a confidence that comes to Alisson. I just think because Adrian's the one. He's the one who's taking the most consistent like hits on social media and all that kind of stuff. Like, and he will do because I've been saying this all season. We've always got, and years to be fair, there's always got to be a scapegoat. He's an easy one. He's an easy target. I'm having so many people asking me questions. People talking about this 17-year-old Brazilian goalkeeper we've brought in because there's this weird. Like, is he being brought in because he's going to come in? It's like, no, he's not. He's a 17-year-old child that we've bought to
Tim Keller. Yeah, I've seen people ask that. No,
there's tons of them. Adrian is the second choice for a reason. That might change. Like, look, if he has a catastrophic game here, then Jürgen might, you know, pull the trigger and it might be Kelleher's turn to have a little go. I think if it's not, the fact that it's not tells you that Kelleher's nowhere near ready for it. And again, we just got to make our peace with the Adrian stuff for now because he is the second choice goalkeeper. We don't have a third other option. Not many clubs do, to be perfectly honest. You run the risk of, particularly in the environment, I think it's different. If Adrian's injured and Alisson gets injured and Kelleher comes in, then he comes in with everyone's support and it's a free hit for him. If you bring him in when you're scrutinising your goalkeeper position, you're just going to ruin his career. We've seen that happen to goalkeepers at Liverpool loads and also on an England level. It happens all the time as well. So with Adrian, for me, Ross, you've just got to go, look, we're an amazing team with our second choice goalie in. And our second choice goalie is nowhere near as good as our first choice goalie. Most teams' first choice goalies aren't as good as our first choice goalie. Everton certainly isn't even on the same fucking planet as Alisson. So it's not. We've got to shrug and we've got to trust that Liverpool are going to do something. Liverpool will have to change their style of play to better suit the goalkeeper. At a great point on this made a couple of weeks ago. Adrian's mistake comes about because we're playing fucking waist-high passes to him on his goal line. You don't play those passes to Adrian.
Yeah.
We're going to have to... We can play better with Adrian because we have played better.
He's done the hard bit on that, though.
Yeah.
The mad thing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He's done the fucking hard bit.
Yeah, his first touch was great for that. It was just a five-yard pass afterwards. He didn't quite manage. But I think you have to make those passes sometimes, and he should be able to adapt to that.
That's bollocks, mate. He's not good enough. You don't put fucking.
But if you say
you don't
that,
put him up front and say, "I'm going to play a fucking 30-yard fucking through ball into the channel for him to chase down," do you? Because that's not it's not his style of play.
No, but what I'm saying, there's be situations where you have to pass back to your goalkeeper. You can't completely change. You can't go completely the other way because Everton will just go, "Well, what run towards now? I'll cut off the other pass."
No, of course not. Yeah. But what you do is you don't make him a central figure to your play.
Oh God, yeah.
Because Alisson is a central figure to how we play. We adjusted it last season when he was in goal. We played far less passes back to the goalkeeper because you see it in possession. He can't kick the ball as well. So you might as well work an alternative, or you just use him sparingly. And when he's used sparingly, he's fine. But if we demand that Adrian is Alisson, we're going to be in a world of shit because he's not Alisson, and we're going to look fucking stupid.
The thing is, I totally get your point, Paul, but also when we space our players out, that's all because of Alisson. Like, that whole thing needs changing. That's a lot of work that needs doing on the training ground, and the lads haven't been on the training ground, so you'd have to probably introduce that, if that's the plan, you have to probably introduce that quite slowly or expect that things are going to happen, you know, because it's going to be harder to play passes to the midfield players and stuff like that. Now, like I say, I agree with you, you know, we definitely don't be playing fucking bouncing balls soon. But Robbo didn't really have the ball under control either, and he'd done the hard part.
Robbo plays that back instinctively.
Yeah.
Because he's used to Alisson.
And rightfully so. And maybe when Robbo overthinks things, he makes a mistake, and that's something that you've got to look out for as well at the same time. So you can't ask everybody to change just because one player's come in differently. You know, what you've got to accept is, you know, I think Jürgen will want us to play the same way. Maybe drop the line 5 yards, something like that. And maybe say to the defenders, listen, there are times if you're thinking about playing a fucking hard ball back, out it, lad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Out it. Like,
you're not talking.
Because Adrian's going to out it anyway.
Listen, Liverpool are not going to go back, are not going to revert 5 years in play because of the goalkeeper, but it requires a modification of style. The same way if you put a different player into midfield, you change your style when you've got Oxlade-Chamberlain in midfield to when you've got Jordan Henderson in midfield, subtly. And I think it's that, because again, it's what we had to do last season. It's there in the statistics and how Liverpool changed their style of play, because you can't build from the back with a guy who can't pass the ball. And this is where you thought, this is not us, you know, there's no Adrian learning to do anything. Adrian's Adrian. So you either make your peace with it. As fans, we have to make our peace with it one way or the other. If Klopp decides to keep with exactly the same style of play, then we're going to concede the same type of goals. We're going to have gaping holes between our back line and our goalkeeper because he doesn't play that extra 10, 15 yards up the pitch that Alisson naturally does. And he's going to kick more balls out for throw-ins. He's going to concede more possession to the opponents.
But that might be something that you'd ask him to do. Rather than try and play that
to
ball.
To give balls off for throw-ins.
He does it anyway. When he plays the fucking pass. You know what I mean? So, and I don't think that Liverpool did change their style too much last year. I looked at those stats and tactics every week. I didn't see anything different in that. So I don't know what stats you're looking at.
It was a thing doing the rounds at the time, that the amount of time the ball that we went back to the goalkeeper was doing the
because what you do is you can say to the goalkeeper, play the ball long.
Yeah.
Rather than play the ball short, and then you're out of those. And what happens then, though, with Adrian is he knocks the ball out of play, you know, because that's what he does. He tries that ball to the fullback, and it goes over the fullback's head straight for the throw-in. At that point, you may as well just play the ball to Sadio Mane, which is something, whenever we've gone long, he's the player that we tend to go to.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's right, isn't it? Again, it just feels to me like there'll be a natural shift, because they'd be fucking stupid not to. It's... But this is the thing. There's no point in hanging Adrian out to dry. Soz, he's the Liverpool goalkeeper. You can't go back in time and change it. We can't go back and do different things in the transfer market. We can't change history. You're always looking for a backup goalkeeper. Every backup goalkeeper is a big crowd. We actually weirdly got lucky last year of the way that he got thrown in. Because backup goalkeepers very rarely get that. They normally get. He'd have been terrible. If he'd just come in for the League Cup, he'd have probably been, you know, and the FA Cup, he'd have been shit last season. But we were
saying this a couple of weeks ago, weren't we? Is that, like, you know, eroding of confidence? When you come in and the lads have never played with him and he does really well and he wins you a cup, and then all of a sudden, as he comes in this time, you've had a few mistakes from your goalkeeper, you're not as confident in your goalkeeper. He didn't have that last time around. Yeah. He came in, as you say, complete clean slate, won us a penalty shootout, and there's confidence there. That's eroded away.
It's tough coming into isolated matches. You know, you need a runner. The goalkeeper's the most consistent position on the pitch, you know, with the exception of wherever Virgil van Dijk wants to be, but like, that's just because he's so... You don't change your goalkeeper. Goalkeepers require rhythm more than most. So when you're dropping them into isolated things, it's not like he's playing Rezzy's footy. He's sitting on the bench and he's warming up. He's not playing a competitive match, and that's when you start to see.
But he's jumping into rugby dummies.
Oh, I know. But you,
with Achterberg.
But you start to see him
how to kick.
Yeah, oh God, yeah. Who can't even walk without a limp? Bless him. I love John Achterberg. But yeah, that. And again, look, a run of games actually might suit Adrian, and it'll suit Liverpool because
suit him because we don't have a choice.
Well, exactly. But it's more likely to suit him than the other way around, because he's worse when he just dropped in for ice. Later games, when he plays a run of games, he's actually been okay for us.
Yeah, Chris just said it right there. We don't have a choice at this point. And in his defence, three of those goals weren't his fault. Most of them weren't. They would have deflected. Yeah. But also, in his defence, he didn't have a defence in front of him, which, you know, doesn't
difficult.
It's not his fault. But yeah, it's the bouncing back thing that we talked about last week. I think the final word stuff of, you just conceded seven goals. His confidence will be on the floor. So, you know, you look into what people's mentality and the manager at this point and the players, like we said, they haven't been with each other, but you've got to pick yourself up. You've got to go again. You've got to put that behind you. You know, we as fans probably find it out because we're still talking about it now, but he needs to get a good run of clean sheets, as you said, behind him, and some confidence between not just fans, but the defence in front of him as well, because we said the same thing about Karius. I've no doubt in my mind the defence would have thought to Karius, I don't trust him. So they second-guessed themselves, like you said, with Robbo. Do they then drop back 5, 10 yards because they think, oh, it's not Alisson behind us? The rapport's not there. They need to build that confidence we've seen within games. It's just mad. It's the Merseyside derby is the kind of the first one.
But if you're talking about a wounded animal here, it's an opportunity to come out and fucking really put that to bed. You know what I mean? Because as much as we've been talking about, it will have affected the players, even on international duty. I mean, fucking Grealish was there with Hendo, wasn't he? You know what I mean? On international duty, I think, I'm sure I saw photos of them. Yeah. I don't think that Grealish hasn't fucking mentioned to Jordan Henderson that they absolutely snotted Liverpool the week before international duty. That will piss them off. Yeah. It'll piss them off that Everton are top of the table, and that they should go out there and fight for fucking everything, scrap for everything. And because all they've heard since fucking restart of football is Liverpool aren't the same team now.
Yeah,
you know, it's going to be dead hard. That's just all Liverpool needs to spur them on.
Yeah,
and now I'd couple that with the result, they should be going out there like a fucking badger backed up in a corner or something, just game on, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
that's the one thing that we spoke about Man City last season when they lost to the likes of Norwich and Wolves. We used the caveat last season that the league was done and we dropped 5-10% because we could. But it was different this time because, you know, we're going for the league and every game's kind of must win. It's the message that it sends out to other teams that Liverpool are beatable. And within that game, I know we've just had an in-depth on Adrian, but like, the midfield didn't exist in that game either. You know, there's only probably, Salah, Robbo and probably Jota in that game that had a decent game. You missed Henderson massively. First ball, second ball, even third balls in that game against Aston Villa. No one was getting anywhere near them. We need that energy in this game, particularly with Everton's midfield, that they've now got one. I think that's where the biggest battle will
be. Do you know what Liverpool need to do? I think anyway.
Play Origi?
No. I think Liverpool need to get that pass back from Trent to Salah. You know the one from 2 years ago that was on every
big
single...
down the channel, yeah.
When was the last time you saw us play that ball?
Yeah.
From 10 to Salah. There was a real connection there. And I wonder whether it was when Jordan Henderson moved into the eight positions that ball stopped being played.
Yeah.
I don't know whether he plays that eight slightly differently or something. And I wonder whether, you know what I mean?
Because is it just that teams don't leave that much space?
It could be. Or it could be that the midfield plays in a slightly different way. Because Henderson drifts over into that space quite often when he's playing that eight position. But I'd love, like, when we're thinking about the goalkeeper and how to get out from the back, that was something that we'd always utilise instead of going back to the goalkeeper, wasn't it? He just whipped that ball down the sideline and let Salah go one-on-one with the defender. And we don't seem to do that anymore, which is quite interesting.
Maybe he's got too many markers on him.
It could be that.
Yeah, it could be. It's, I mean, again...
Keep him honest, though, doesn't it?
You
know what I mean?
You find, don't you, when there's an obvious method... That's the most obvious thing. If we know it exists, opposition know it exists.
That's what I mean. You can probably bring that back out at some point.
That ties into the reason why they bought Thiago. And not teams working us out, but people knew our patterns of play and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
So you got in for this game to
hopefully. Do we think Ancelotti's gonna go toe to toe with us here? Because he's achieved a good degree of success by being solid and resolute. You know, I'm convinced that derby again and restart. It was about them not losing. He needed to set a tone for the return of football, and he wanted to make them as hard to beat as possible. But now that he's got his midfield and he's got that talent, I mean, I don't know whether, you know, when you've got Richarlison and James Rodriguez in your team.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Are they even capable of parking the bus? And also, the teams that have given us the most problems are actually the teams that have really gone at us this season. What do we reckon?
Go on, mate.
I'm not sure whether he's got a choice at this point because of the way that they've played and the way that they've played has paid off for them. They've scored a lot of goals, but the big concern is they've also conceded goals, and there's only Spurs away, and Spurs are pretty shit in that game that they kept a clean sheet. I think a big contrast in what he's been doing to then kind of tie it back, and it kind of ties into the setup before of it's the best time to play Liverpool, go for broke. They've not had time to settle, to have the team talk, as it were, to kind of, you know, get back up. If you don't get Liverpool while they're down, I get the backlash stuff, like it could go that way, but I think he has to be seen to go for this, because if you don't, you end up going low block and counter-attacking. As you just said, Leeds had to go to us, Aston Villa had to go to us. When it compared to Man City games last season, Norwich had to go to Man City and got something. Wolves had to go at Man City twice and got something. I think that's how you beat Liverpool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's going to be interesting to see whether he's got like whether he can do it, because it's a dangerous game, isn't it, Chris, coming at Liverpool? Because it takes big bollocks, it really does, and that's why Aston Villa gets so much credit for how they played against us, because it's all well and good going, well, the key to beating Liverpool is to go on the front foot, but Liverpool could just batter you. You know, absolutely batter you going the other way, and that's the Villa game on a different day. Liverpool probably could score a bag full of goals in that, and we're talking about a different thing. Carlo Ancelotti's not a man who's lacking in bottle in any way, shape or form, so it, but it is an interesting conundrum.
I think a lot of our goals, although Villa probably came at us more than the other sides, a lot of our goals have been conceded on the counter, and that's from soaking up pressure and knocking that ball down to where the right back is anyway. I expect that's probably the pattern of play that we'll come up against. You know, if I'm a manager, and I've come up against Liverpool into this game, I'd be like, prove that you can fucking defend this before I try something else. Because I know this works.
Yeah.
I may as well just keep going. And that's what happened a couple of years ago with Trent. You know, teams kept on picking on Trent until he stood up and we stopped conceding those types of goals. It's come back around. He needs to go and do that again. We need to prove that we can stop that. I think, hopefully, if Thiago's in the midfield, Jordan Henderson, that kind of dictates the play itself as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'd imagine we'd have 55-60% possession if they're playing well, and therefore Everton have only really got one way of doing things.
The thing, the difference with the other teams, isn't it, is it's all well and good counter-attacking on Wednesday going to Liverpool, where Villa were different and Leeds were similar. They went for the full 90. You know, there were so many teams who would get a goal or two up against the point and go, fuck, right, okay, we're done. We're sound. They went, nah, it's all right, we're just going to keep going. Let's go and have three. Go and have three and have four. So, yeah, this is an interesting one.
It'd be interesting to see how Liverpool line up in the back four, because I think Richarlison's probably a good one. Like, I fucking hate him, but I think he's also a good player. And in these games, he's aggressive. I think there's a part there where you've got, particularly after the Aston Villa game, with Trent and Gomez in there. Like, that's potentially a weak spot that Everton could go and attack. And we saw it with Leeds as well, went down that left-hand side quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Everton could get something out of that if they kind of, you know, you've got James Rodriguez, Richarlison attacking down there and being aggressive and putting front foot in, whilst Joe Gomez's confidence is, if he plays, is still on the floor. I think it'll be interesting as well.
Yeah. Robbo's going to nail James Rodriguez, by the way.
100%. Yeah, absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt. Hey, welcome back. Did you get the answer correctly? I'm just going to dive into the live comments and see if anyone actually got it. What would be your guesses, sorry?
13.
Chris?
Two against AC Milan.
Yeah.
Two against Real Madrid. One of that 1-0 that we went to.
Ooh, he's working that out.
Four against Everton. Four against Napoli.
Okay.
Two against Everton. And then Chelsea. Was he there for a year or was he there for two? He won the league. So I don't think he did just one season. And then I don't know whether we played them in the cups, so I'll go 14.
Oh, Chrissy Pajak.
Yeah?
Outstanding.
Really? Absolutely. This is where you normally go, no?
No, 14.
You just
correct.
Made me... Okay.
100% correct, absolutely. And the person whose name I saw that stuck out to me was David Darcy, who nailed it with 14 times.
So was he at Chelsea for 2 years?
He did play four times. We played Chelsea under Carlo Ancelotti.
Didn't count that. Away game.
Yeah, there you go. Really good, yeah, really good indeed. And just to answer a question, we didn't play him as a player, so it's fine.
And how many times did Ajax get mentioned in the comments?
That's it, we'll choose not to. really interesting that. So yeah, we've played 14 times and managed five different clubs against us down the years. Really interesting stuff indeed.
He's a bloody good manager, lad.
He's amazing, I really like him. At one point, we didn't get... It probably fits more in the first half of the show, but it's one of the things about the derby stuff is I'm enjoying the return of... It's been a bit awkward and shoehorned in. We talked about this on the podcast, like the Blues are trying... They know they can banter us. They've just forgotten how to fit it into...
Seven!
2, top of the league. It's like, we have a cup of tea. Yes, I'd like a top of the league cup of tea. Doesn't work.
What time is it? 7-2.
That cup of tea was unbeatable. No. But I'm enjoying the rivalry, Chris, has been fucking horrible for years because it's had to become really, it's become really deeply entrenched. And we say bitter. I know people use like the bitters as a really like casual throwaway term for Evertonians. It's
better than gobshite.
Well, no. but the bitter side thing you've got, because you've had like two generations now of raised on we hate Liverpool, and they start to genuinely believe it. I'm enjoying the fact that they've got a boss manager who's dead cool, and he's Klopp-like, but in a completely different way. He's allowing them to enjoy the ride again. I mean, look at them. You've got four of their players doing some shit dance celebration. I mean, I genuinely enjoyed Seamus Coleman running over and going, yeah, no, not for me. Can't be having that.
What was that?
They were all doing some mad like dance, like Calvert-Lewin and that. And Seamus Coleman runs up behind them and like looks and goes,
"Nah,
yeah, no, just, like, can't be part of that." But you know, again, they're doing that song they got in the chart and they're doing all that. It's actually quite, it's made the whole football environment in Liverpool loads more pleasant, and that's the benefit of having two really likeable, really talented managers in the city.
Yeah, I love the fact that, like, all of them call him Mr. Ancelotti. Like, there's a fucking, just a level of respect there. Like, yeah. And that's what he, to be fair, he garners that from what he's done in football. I mean, as a player and as a manager, he's just been tremendous and he's won everything and he's given them hope.
Yeah.
And that's what we're seeing right now. And I don't know whether they've got belief yet that they're going to really break the top four this season. It's probably too early for them. But that what they've realised is, just enjoy the ride.
Yeah.
And it's what we've been saying for fucking years. Take your wins when you get them. Enjoy your wins when you get them. Give it out when you can, because you don't know the next time that you're going to be able to do that.
100%.
It's the belief in change, isn't it? And that's exactly what we had in Jurgen Klopp. You could see steady progress. Things weren't perfect. Things weren't always rosy, but you could see there was an end goal. Or there was literal improvements. Even the players that he's brought in, like, they wouldn't have those players under the previous manager.
That's the
because
thing.
Of who he is.
Well, we've been saying this to Toffee lads for ages. You've got to look for those. You've got to look for the journey. You've got to look for the progression and take heart from that. They haven't, we've been saying to them, do that, but they haven't had that because they've had a bunch of overpaid, under-motivated players playing for them, and now they've got a bunch of lads, you know, under a manager. You can't. It's like we were saying with the Alisson stuff last year, when Alisson makes his mistake against Leicester, we go, and shrug it off, because you can't go and buy better.
Yeah.
So you have to accept that the best makes these mistakes, so you're more forgiving of all the things that go wrong along the way. And they've got that now, and they've actually got something that they can finally buy into, and fair play to them. Sorry, Ross, I just want to get the super chats from earlier on in the show. Lars Godley with £5 super chat. Thank you. Just cheers, lads. I listen to your pod every day on my hour-long commute. Great to catch a live show. Keep it up. Big love from Sheffield. Big love,
nice
indeed.
One.
Big love from Liverpool. John Conway, €2 super chat.
Everton, captain of the world.
Everton 1, Liverpool 3. Nice prediction. Like it. Buddha with 100 squiggles. It's a good time to play every time. It's a good time
it
to play.
It makes me laugh every time, though.
Yeah. It's a good time to play the Bitters. They're on a high, and it's time to bring them back to the ground. As for having Adrian, they have Pickford. That's a good point. And welcome to Mo Dilbar, who's joined as a club captain.
Yes,
our YouTube memberships are available now. The show, we had a... I can't get into it here. We recorded some amazing shows yesterday that had no audio on them. So the members' show for this week... Hopefully, barring any other consequence, sitting down with David Lynch from The Standard to talk through some bits and pieces, do a Reds new special later on today. That will be the show exclusive for the members for this week. And from next week, it's back to being the weekend final word. So it'll be the final word show from the Merseyside Derby for club captain and club legend tier YouTube members. Chris. Really mixed availability news. Overall, good. You know, in terms of injuries, we know now Matip's back in training, Thiago's back in training, Mane's back in training. Shaqiri played 66 minutes for the Swiss.
Did
shock.
He?
Yeah, absolutely. He's alive. Which is a thing. He's not going to play, but he's alive. Jordan Henderson got some time off the bench to help his fitness return after 20 minutes last night. Trent and Gomez were unused subs. So things are all looking kind of okay. It's only really Oxlade-Chamberlain, I think, and possibly Naby Keita with COVID. And obviously Alisson, that we don't really kind of know.
Sorry, Robertson got himself a yellow card for kicking the ball away, so he got suspended for the next one as well. He got a
nice
suspended.
Work, yeah. Robert. Is the next one a friendly or a league? I mean, the next international break. Is that a friendly or
they missed the game that he's just played.
They're all Nations League games, all of them.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a fucking game. Are they even? I don't think they're even our friendlies anymore, are they? Aren't they all?
That's what he's saying.
Yeah, are they all Nations League? Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, we know we've got to do with that, but there's obviously some downsides to it. Like,
I was told there was 2 weeks without football. What? Is that for the international break?
What?
Yeah, that's
made up. Liverpool haven't been playing international football.
Yeah,
it's okay.
Yeah, it's been weird. Diogo Jota scored 2 and got an assist last night. Gini and Virgil played the full 90 for the Dutch. But the problem with this, of course, is it's great. Like, so back home training, Milner will have been there the whole time. Chris, Salah's been there, Mane's been there, Thiago's been there, and a clutch.
Harvey Elliott was supposed to be quite good in training with Thiago.
Absolutely, of course he was, because he's the next Messi. We all know that, right? But it's the slight concern. It's like the Jota thing, you know. Again, he's playing. What would that have been Wednesday night? Yeah, that's right. Thursday's the day, right? I've lost so many days. Yeah. He's playing Wednesday night and we're playing early doors. So, yes. You know, he's only going to... You're talking rest and recuperation, recovery days are Thursday. Then you've got a day, the Friday to train, and then the matches, again, is like the
to be fair, like, he played for Wolves. Like, I mean, they play like 70 games in a year. He should be up for it. Like, how many Europa League games did they play?
Yeah.
Like, he hasn't had a day off in 2 years. Yeah. Don't get me wrong, but I'm sure he'll be up for it. Like,
yeah. I mean, that's just the issue with the internationals, isn't it? Is that the preparation time.
They are getting 3 games in, are they? Is that, have we just had 3 games in the international?
Some of them have played, yeah.
That's fucking mental, isn't it? Like, absolutely mental.
Yeah,
like,
beyond ridiculous.
It's just stupid. And, you know, for me, I think, you know, I think it makes it difficult for Liverpool, but nowadays it makes it difficult for every Premier League side. There's so many internationals, isn't there? And when you look at who's coming back, I mean, Mane, Thiago, they're big boosts, and then you've got question mark. Personally, I don't think that Matip will be starting in this game, but I wonder, I actually think if Matip and Gomez were both fit and both match fit, I probably would drop Matip into this one for the aerial threat of Calvert-Lewin.
Yeah.
And it makes me wonder, and I don't think Klopp's going to do this, but I wonder whether Fabinho's in line for a centre-back start because of that threat.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you go with like a Henderson, Thiago, Wijnaldum, midfield three, or Milner because he's been there. I'm not 100% sure. But I think Gomez is probably the weaker of the three of them in the air. And I'm not saying he's bad because I don't think Gomez is a bad player. I think he's a really good player.
Mm-hmm.
And I still think that he's got a higher ceiling than Matip. But for this game, I probably would have dropped Matip in if he was fit.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because he's going to have to get his game at some point, Ross. You know, he's going to have to get up to match fitness and the games are coming thick and fast from now on, you know.
But it's also man management of Joe Gomez. Like, if you drop him into this game, what does that do to him? Like, you know, he's had the game against England whenever they played. Like,
after being, he was pulled off dead early, wasn't he, Gomez, in the last game? I always say that. He was pulled off dead early.
His confidence would be through the roof.
I think Klopp reached round and pulled him off straight away.
But, like, you know, if Joe Gomez is sat there, and he probably should be dropped if he didn't have a great game against Aston Villa, but then he's going to be sat there stewing on it, and he's a young lad. He's been through the
Klopp middle. Does have a history of, if you've had a bad game, you start the next one to go and get yourself sorted again.
But then you're right, you know, it's Ajax on Wednesday night, you know, what do you do then? Is that a good game for Joel Matip to come into? You know,
Matip on the pitch at some point is probably not a bad idea. I mean, again, ideally you want to be in a position where the game is, you're at least winning the game and then you can afford to
make that defenders change. like Klopp used to do back in the day.
But it wouldn't shock me to see a situation where Klopp's ideal situation, I think, is Gomez starts centre-half and then with 20 minutes to go, you take Trent off, you move Gomez to right-back and you bring Matip on and just give him the end of the game just to do it. You know, it's his go-to, tried and tested. I'm just going to shut up
a little bit. I'd love to be like 2-0, 3-0 with 5 to go and bring Matip on in a 10, you know. I just think as a spectator and lover of football, glorious.
Oh yeah, just play into the whole madness of brilliant. Modern footy.
Imagine thing, if like, you yeah. started a game with Fabinho at centre-back and Matip in the DM, how funny would that be? I mean, it's something that I just find really amusing about Joel Matip.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. That's why he's got like an I know context Twitter account that's flying because he's
does he?
He's a very unusual.
No, excuse me.
Oh, it's amazing. Whatever you do with Joe Gomez, it's a gamble, isn't it? Because if you throw him in, you think you need a chance to put this right.
It's a real commitment to a bit from Chris
there. It's not a bit, mate.
Yeah, it is good account, Matt. He needs a chance to put it right and put it behind him and go forward because, like you said, the next, 4 weeks before another international break, there's a big chunk of games. We're going to need him at some point. You can't, like I said, leave him stewing and being annoyed, but at the same time, he needs to up his own game. So Matip will look at that game probably and go, well, he was terrible in the last game. I should be starting this one. So it's about man management.
Yeah, again, it literally all depends on where Matip's at and he's just had such bad luck with injuries, hasn't he?
Has he even started? Like, he's not started a game this season, has he? Did he start the Community Shield or did Fabinho start centre half in that game?
I genuinely can't remember that far back in my life, Chris, but thanks for asking. There's no way of knowing the answer, so let's not even worry about it. He's had consistent. I think he played in the Black. He scored in the Blackpool pre-season friendly game, didn't he?
Blackpool. Fucking hell.
Yeah, he scored a header in that game. I remember that much. No, it's an interesting one. I guess it's going to depend on the upcoming games. And when you look at it, Everton at the weekend, Ajax midweek, Sheffield United is at the following weekend.
Midnight then, onto the Saturday.
Then Midgetland the following Tuesday. It's just they're laughing. It'd be like Gulliver's Travels, it'd be great. It's just whether 3 games from now is
It's too much time.
It's too much of a gap. You know what I mean? It's too much of a gap. Is that too much? I mean, you shouldn't need to rotate your centre-halves. So it shouldn't matter from Gomez's perspective. Gomez and Van Dijk should be able to play all of them games back-to-back. There should be no problems with that whatsoever. But it's whether, yeah, it's like I say, does John Matip benefit from a couple of little, you know, closing a game out appearances and then you're getting ready for the middle? And the problem is, sorry, Chris, is that he's just as likely to get injured in training between then, yeah, and then you've missed your opportunity to give Gomez a day off.
My thing at the moment with the centre-halves is, and I don't want to get into the Joe Gomez debate and all that type of stuff really, but as a partnership, they're not playing well together. Mm-hmm. Van Dijk and Matip and Gomez. Yeah. And not really anyone's talking about that, because
yeah,
both of them are in pretty poor form. Yeah. And that, for me, sends off more warning signs than just one of them having a few bad mistakes, making a few bad mistakes.
Yeah.
As a partnership, that looks like it needs a bit of a refresh at the moment for me.
Absolutely.
So Matip and Fabinho was thinking about them.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
I just wonder whether if you do bring Matip in, Van Dijk's form just goes up a little touch.
The one other really interesting thing here is, again, Milner's been there the whole thing, training, being, getting fit and all that kind of stuff. We've seen historically, Milner tends to play after these breaks because he's just there, been soaking up the tactical information, all that kind of shit. But if you've got Jordan Henderson back to fitness, which you'd imagine now that he's had a few games for England, he should be in contention for this one. Obviously, Fabinho's still there. Obviously, he was an unused sub on Tuesday for Brazil, so he should be absolutely fine for this one as well. I mean, relatively speaking, Bobby Firmino's going to play, isn't he? Even though
genuine question, do you know where they play?
Peru, I couldn't tell you where they played.
Sometimes they just play those games in Europe, don't they, randomly? Yeah. Like, you find out Brazil have just played at Wembley.
The kind of point I'm driving towards is Thiago's there, but we don't know enough about Thiago, the Liverpool player, to know how we'll use him yet. We saw him play in the six, in, you know, against Chelsea, but that was an enforced decision because of Jordan Henderson's injury. Was that right?
Well, that and the fact Jordan that there was a red card for them.
Yeah, so we subbed him off for that. We subbed Jordan off at half time, didn't we, in that one. So it's, if we've got, let's say it's Henderson, Thiago, Milner are the best three fittest options or whatever, I don't know how you fit them into a midfield. I don't know where they play. Who plays? Does Thiago play this? Does Thiago play the six in that one? Does Henderson play the six? Can Thiago play further forward in our system? I don't know. It's a really interesting one. Or, and then you throw Fabinho. Fabinho's available.
Go on, say it. Go on.
Four,
two, three, one.
a possibility. Let us know your thoughts on what you would do in the comments underneath. Right. Score predictions, gents.
Oh, fucking hell.
8-4. 7. No, 4-8. No, go on, Chris, what do you think?
1-0 Liverpool.
1-0. I could see this being a 2-1-er. Another late, you know, a late dramatic goal.
How late?
Divock Origi, 90 plus. What a minute we haven't scored one in. 90 plus 3, maybe? 90 plus 1? Whatever it takes. Whatever it takes to do it. I would just personally, we discussed this the other day, I would have Divock Origi just stood warming up barely, but just
him
stood
occasionally,
just stand there,
getting in his Halloween costume,
and just look at Pickford for the whole game, and then every now and again go like he's coming on, and they go nah, and it's the Pickford go, oh god, and just get in, psychologically get in his head all that you can, because you know he'll just try to like laugh it off or something and make a cock of himself, which would be great.
I'm gonna go 1-0 Liverpool, Pickford own goal.
Oh wow, great.
I'm going 3-2 as me sensible.
Okay.
Answer.
Sounds. Score predictions in the comments below. Just before we wrap up, Eth Sham Ul Hassan with a £5 super chat. Surely an animal is most dangerous when it's been hammered 7-2. I'm not sure I'm not sure many animals have experienced that, but that's fine. Perhaps the Villa game could be a start of another route of success like Spurs 4-0. I think that's the hope of all of us, really, isn't it? Is that Liverpool can use this as a catalyst to kick on. And personally, just as we wrap up, I'm more confident about this game because we got tonked, because there is something to that, just that pride, that there's more pride on the line, I think, for Liverpool, because a defeat, particularly now against the resurgent Everton, you've got to live in that a little bit more. The wounded animal thing, I think, is a very good analogy in this. But gentlemen, thank you. That's been wonderful. Thank you so much for everyone who's watched along and commented along live on the YouTube channel. If you're listening after the fact in podcast form, you guys are amazing as well. Leave a 5-star review. There's plenty of things you can do to support us. As aforementioned, the brand new book is available. There's some amazing merchandise. And if you're on YouTube and you want an additional bonus show, which will be the final word show from this very game, then join up as a member, and here's a little guide on how to do that.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.